Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Steve Spurrier is wrong again. It seems like we've been saying that a lot over the last few years. Spurrier, a shadow his former glorious self as of late, embarrassing the way that he ended his career as South Carolina coach in 2015, kind of a little bit of a silly venture into the, what is it called, the AAF that has now folded, claiming a championship for season that never ended. It's not been a great run over the last few years, I would say, for Spurrier, but he has weighed in on the Georgia-Florida rivalry and its future in Jacksonville. And I think for some Georgia fans, this is kind of interesting because I think it does lead us to what Georgia actually thinks about this. And the real truth of why maybe Georgia coach Kirby Smart is pushing for change in this. He may not get what he wants, more on that in a moment, but I think the reason why Kirby Smart is pushing for that change is still greatly misunderstood by a lot of people. Let me give you an example. As I said, Spurrier has weighed in on this. He was on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday talking about, I guess, a lot of things. He's over in that restaurant. We kind of mocked him for that a bit yesterday on Dog Nation Daily. But in discussing with Feinbaum on the show, the subject of Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville has come up. It has come up a lot so far this offseason. Now, let me read you this quote from Spurrier. It's a little bit long, but it does set us up to go somewhere kind of interesting today. He says, "I understand what Georgia's saying now. Back in 1990, when I got to Florida my first year, the Gators wanted to move the game. We had lost 15 out of the last 20, and they were telling me, 'Coach, we can't beat them there.' Well, I said, 'Wait a minute. We take a bus ride over there. It's the Gator Bowl. It's on Florida soil. Georgia has to fly down there. They have to travel a long way for fans.'" This is Steve Spurrier from the Feinbaum Show yesterday. "I said, this ought to be to our advantage. So we start turning it into an advantage, I guess. We had a lot better team than they did in the early 90s, and the Gators were happy playing all those games there." But then Spurrier goes on to say on Feinbaum yesterday, "But I can see Georgia's side of it. Tell the truth, I'd be very similar if the Gators were to go to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium Atlanta and play there every other year. It wouldn't make sense, but Jacksonville's a wonderful place. A lot of history there also in the old Gator Bowl. That's now a different name, but we hope it stays there." A lot of outlets did some reporting on this yesterday, 24/7 Sports, Saturday Down South, and others, about Steve Spurrier and the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. Here's the part, though, where I think Spurrier is wrong, and he's been wrong about a lot in recent years. Georgia's issue with this game is not about the fact that Georgia once lost some games in Jacksonville. Now, to Spurrier's credit, when he was coaching there in the 90s, obviously Florida had plenty of success there against Georgia, and that's the kind of thing that Georgia fans, a history they don't like reliving. The 2000s were really good Georgia teams losing in that series. But in the discussion that's ongoing now, that stuff that happened in the distant past is not a factor into this whatsoever. Georgia's wish, or maybe more specifically Kirby Smart's wish, because frankly, for all of Georgia, it is not necessarily wish. Kirby Smart's wish for changing this game doesn't really have anything to do with anything that Steve Spurrier just cited there. Now, I do think it's really interesting that Spurrier, to the extent that he still represents Florida, is kind of an ambassador in the late stage of his kind of, sort of presence in the sport of college football, almost passively aggressively makes the move necessary for Georgia. When you've got Spurrier calling it a Florida home game, a lot of Georgia fans are going to say, "Well, if that's the way that he feels, then we ought to get out of there." Dan Mullen recently did the same thing. Remember when he was really referencing something other than Georgia, but it's going to be taken to mean in reference to Georgia as well, that anytime the Gators are playing a game in the state of Florida, we count that as a Florida home game. Well, that is going to push some Georgia fans to say, "Well, if that be the case, then Georgia ought not be playing every single year in Jacksonville." But ultimately, Kirby Smart's desire to move this game is not related to any of that kind of stuff whatsoever. It's not a home field advantage for Florida. It's not a larger crowd. It's not even really that much of a travel advantage in this modern time, in the way that you can kind of fly out of Athens and stay in a hotel before the game, which Georgia does before every single one of its games anyway. For Kirby Smart, this is more about recruiting. When I had a chance to talk to Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarrity last week, that came up. I asked him, "Hey, you hear from a lot of fans about this Georgia-Florida game in Jacksonville. Who wants it to stay there? Who wants it to go?" I said to him, "What is the balance of opinion on this right now?" In McGarrity's answer, he also talked about Kirby Smart's feelings, which are very different than what Spurrier just described them as. Here is McGarrity on the Georgia fans who might want to move the game, and Kirby Smart, his feelings there as well.
It's usually, I think any decision of that nature is going to be 50-50 or 60-40 one way or another. There's been feedback from a lot of people on why the game should move, why the game should stay in Jacksonville. You know, it's been there since 1933, and I know Kirby's been very vocal about the importance in recruiting, and that's certainly an important element of it, but there are a lot of other elements that go into the decision. So we're waiting to have further discussions with the city of Jacksonville to where we can receive maybe more updated information on what we may be looking at down the road. What will we receive? We'll evaluate it, but you know, when we do receive that, we'll huddle with our peers at the University of Florida. We'll huddle internally with Kirby and the president, and maybe some other staff members to really give it a deep dive into what's best for the University of Georgia. And I'm sure Georgia and Florida will be on the same page. We usually are on a lot of issues, but there's a lot of work to be done. But again, we're in Jacksonville through 2021, so it's not something that has to be done right this second.
So they're under contract for 2021, but you hear McGarrity say there, for Kirby Smart, this is about recruiting and the absence of an opportunity to host some major recruits for a big rivalry game. As Kirby Smart himself has said in the past, our version of Alabama-LSU, that big conference game that everybody has circled, takes place in Jacksonville every year. It's essentially a wasted recruiting opportunity because we can't host recruits for what would be every other year in Athens, a gigantic football game. And then with McGarrity last week, I went on to ask him, and for me, this was the first time I'd heard this said as explicitly as it was. I asked him, so when Kirby Smart references the recruiting, when Kirby Smart says, hey, it is a lost opportunity for recruiting, does that mean officially then that Kirby Smart wants this game moved? Is that his actual opinion? Is that the way you take his opinion? And McGarrity said, well, let me let you hear what he said.
I think that's pretty much where Kirby stands because, you know, he's, you know him better than anybody. He is just a recruiting guru. So anytime something's done to take away from that effort, I think it feels like it affects our program. But there's so many other things going on in that game with that weekend that, you know, you've got to look at every aspect of it because a lot of people from Macon South and Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, we've got a lot of fans in North Florida that really love that game. So there are a lot of things to consider, but we'll all get together. And at the end of the day, whatever decision we make, it'll be our decision.
So I guess this leads you to a question, and I'm someone who has great reverence for all Georgia history, the cocktail party included. I've said before that if it's a vote among every stakeholder to Georgia football, I'd vote to keep the game in Jacksonville, and to a certain extent, I'd campaign for others to vote the same way. However, even someone like me who loves the cocktail party, it is fair to ask, if 50% of Georgia fans want to move the game, and if Kirby Smart wants to move the game, then how is the game going to survive in Jacksonville beyond 2021? Now, you say, well, they make so much more money that they're just going to have to keep doing it, even if half the fans don't want that, and even if Kirby Smart would prefer it be otherwise. Is that really true? Are we really in a stage now where Georgia would choose the additional money that the neutral site venue might provide over the wishes of Kirby Smart? I'm honestly not sure about that. I think that's a very interesting thing to think about and to kind of wonder behind the scenes just how much is Kirby Smart politicking to get his way on this, if we take McGarrity at his word that Smart does want to move the game, and why would we not? How much behind the scenes is he really pushing on this? One more point kind of on this subject. I asked McGarrity, well, you know, you hear him say there that Georgia and Florida kind of work together on these kinds of things. I said, well, what if Georgia wanted to move on and Florida still wanted to keep the game in Jacksonville? You could just do this unilaterally, right? You don't need the cooperation from Florida on that. And in the midst of that answer, McGarrity also said something else that I hadn't really considered before. Here's more from the Georgia Athletic Director.
I don't think that'll happen because we both think alike. Okay. In this game. But who knows if it's their home game, who knows where they could take it. If it's our home game, I know we'd like it here. There's been some talk of Atlanta. I'm not really sure that has much legs. If you're not going to play it in Jacksonville, then the games need to be on campus.
So I never really considered that before. There's been some talk of, well, maybe you do a rotation thing where it's Georgia, I should say it's Athens, it's Gainesville, and then it's Jacksonville, and kind of a rotation. And some people even said, how about you add Atlanta as part of that rotation there as well? McGarrity, who's obviously more involved in the logistics of all this, say, well, if you really made this happen, it'd be the team who gets the home game, their choice of where to play it. So if Florida wanted to play a game in Jacksonville, apparently they could do that. If Georgia wanted to play a game in Jacksonville or Atlanta, they could do that. But the home game would belong to the team, and then they would decide where the game is played. It's a little bit of a logistical fact that I hadn't really thought about. He also kind of, as you hear there, kind of poo-poos the idea the game might be played at any point in time in Atlanta, which I certainly agree with. That, to me, is the least exciting solution to all of this. I mean, here's the overall bottom line. There's obviously a long time to go before any kind of ultimate decision is made. The contract, as McGarrity said, runs through 2021. I'd like to see the cocktail party remain in Jacksonville. I like going to St. Simon's Island the week of that game and kind of soaking up some time at the beach. But I do think it's kind of fair to ask, can this game survive in this venue when seemingly so few people still want it there? My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Thanks for being with us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we love being on the radio in the Classic City each and every day. We are also available as a podcast wherever you find them, Apple, Google, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad that you've checked in on Dog Nation Daily here today. Now, speaking of the world-famous DogNation.com, hope you'll also go there as well and check out information about our Dog Nation Days of Summer. The next big event is Thursday, August 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. This is an unbelievable venue, and we've been there before, and we're going to host a huge event there on that Thursday night, August 1st. It kicks off with the public at 6 p.m. There's a VIP reception at 5 before the big event, and your way to get in on that VIP reception is go ahead and book your room right now. The tab to get into and get to a Brasstown is right there at DogNation.com. Now, anybody that was with at our last Dog Nation Days of Summer event will tell you it was an unbelievable time. We had giveaways, we had gifts, we had fun times. I'm talking about one of the proudest moments for me as a part of Dog Nation was the party we threw at our last Dog Nation Days of Summer event, and I cannot wait for the next one at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. But it's not going to be as much fun unless you are there. So please go to DogNation.com and find out more information about Dog Nation being at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa coming up on Thursday, August 1st. We'll get Jeff Sintel here in just a moment as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern insider update looking at everything going on with UGA recruiting. But before we do that, I do want to right one wrong from yesterday. You know, it's weird to think on a Monday in the middle of June, or kind of now moving towards late June, we'd have too much going on to fit it into one show, because for most people, they think there's kind of the downtime of college football. But around the Georgia football program, it would seem there is no downtime. There's always something going on. And in some weeks, there's a whole lot more going on. Some of it good, maybe some of it not quite so. Yesterday, one of the things that we really did not do was give due diligence to the commitment that Georgia got it on Friday. That's 3-star wide receiver Corey Wren from out of Louisiana, a blazing speedster of the highest order. And as I said to you, or at least I said to our video audience, yeah, if you're watching on Twitter, you see, or watching on video, you see the tweet from, as he likes to be called, Co-Savage, Corey Wren announcing his UGA commitment, and credit to him for wearing the red jersey in his commitment edit there. That's really good to see. But I said this to our video audience before the show started today. There is something I like about Wren that goes beyond just how fast he is, because anybody that talks about Wren is going to talk about the fact that he is, yes, a little undersized for a wide receiver, but my, oh my, boy, can he run. And that's everything that anyone's going to notice kind of first out of the gate about him. But beyond that, when Dog Nation's Jeff Sintel, who we'll speak to in a moment, when he interviewed Wren said something about his desire for Georgia. At the time, it was, if I do go to Georgia. He said something about what he's expecting and hoping for from Cortez Hankton, what he's already appreciated about the Georgia wide receivers coach Hankton, that makes me really appreciate Wren. Here is Wren saying, listen, Hankton's always been really honest with me, and I expect to come to Georgia if I go there, which at the time he didn't know that he was going to do. If I go there, I think he's going to coach me up. You'll like this about Georgia's latest commit. Take a listen.
One thing Coach Hankton stood out was, you know, he didn't sugarcoat anything with me. You know, he told me straight up, you know, my film, it shows that I can run. But, you know, I want you to come in and play receiver for me. You're not showing me really any catching. So, you know, he told me, like, you come here, the speed is there. I can't teach speed, but one thing I can teach you is a route running, you know, consistent catching. You know, I really applaud that of him, you know, not sugarcoating nothing with me, not telling me. I don't like when people tell me, oh, you can come here and start right away. You know, you could be the face of this program. I just don't feed into that. You know, I'd rather come in knowing I have to work for something than knowing that I have to come in with a full head of steam. You know, that's really something that I feel like separates me from a lot of people is my work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a strong work ethic. And I don't take no for an answer. You know,
I mean, listen, I think humble and hungry is kind of an overused cliche when it comes to football, college football especially. But if you ever want to know what humble and hungry sounds like, that's it. Wren says, I've got speed that can't be coached. That's what Hankins told him. But I can teach you how to be a route runner. I can teach you how to be a consistent catcher of the football. I can teach you how to do those kinds of things. And Wren says, I'm not coming here to be the face of the program. I'm coming here to be the workhorse of the program and work and learn and be the best football player I can be. Boy, I like that attitude from this young man. I think it'll serve him well at the University of Georgia. It's Dog Nation Daily. We're glad to have you with us. Some really fun stuff coming up a little bit later on. But for now, let's get ready to talk to Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
You know, each and every week here on Dog Nation Daily, we're lucky enough to get Jeff Sintel's twist on what's going on with UGA recruiting. But when you want chef-inspired food with a twist, let's face it, nobody would ever turn down a really good meal, and that's what Marlowe's Tavern provides, because they take the extra care to do the kinds of things only chefs would do, and they do it with that little extra flair that makes the meal memorable. If you want to impress somebody that first date or that second date or, you know, that 25th wedding anniversary, whatever special occasion, or just fun time hanging out with friends, you know, my recommendation for all of those events are my friends at Marlowe's Tavern. And if you've heard me talk Marlowe's before and you say, I've actually never been there, so many of you have reached out to me on Twitter to say I have been there. But if you still haven't gone there, then become a Marlowe's Tavern insider and you can find out the information you need to know. Text the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S. To 24242, and you can find out about special offers and big events happening at the tavern right there in your neighborhood. Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Without further ado, let's talk to Jeff Sintel here right now. Jeff, I will say good morning to you, and let me bring you in on the conversation we were just having about Corey Wren. You know, the Wren commitment from Friday night kind of gets swallowed up by the Agunbi D commitment, which we'll get to, the news with J.J. Holloman, which is obviously the kind of thing that Georgia fans were slapped in the face by a bit on Friday afternoon, and kind of dominated the weekend. And yet I just played an audio clip from your conversation with Wren, where he talked about wanting to be coached up by Cortez Hankton, wanting to be taught the receiver position from him, maybe suggesting that not every school that's recruited him necessarily had that same attention to detail in terms of giving him the techniques and skills that he needed. I think in addition to Wren's blazing speed, I think that desire to be coached and that willingness to stay humble while he's learning, I think that serves Wren really well in college, and I thought it was an illuminating piece of audio from him. First of all, thanks for doing that kind of reporting for us, and does that mean as much to you as it does to me?
Well, I mean, let's face it, Brandon, and good morning, everybody. He is what it is. This is a Mecole Hardman type role in the Georgia offense. Everybody remembers the Wildcat touchdown against Alabama in the national championship game, how he was able to stretch the field, how he was a weapon on punt returns. And Corey Wren, even though everyone labels him as his speed, and it is some certifiable, verifiable, blinding speed, he wants to be known as more than that. He wants to be known as a guy that goes on high points balls. He wants to be known as a guy that Kirby Smart says, I need a gunner on the punt team. He's going to be like, I'm your Huckleberry. Let's go. And one of the things about Georgia that just stood out for him is Hankton, Cortez Hankton. Let's give some kudos to him, continuing to recruit well in the state of Louisiana. But he identified Wren as a guy that was a speed guy early, and then he went to go see him. And Wren's interpretation of the story is he thought Hankton felt that he was a shorter man, like 5'7", 5'6", 5'8". So when Hankton was able to eyeball him on an in-person spring evaluation, and see he's about 5'9 and a half, about 175, some of the very same measurables as McCollin High School, that's when things, like a lot of things in Corey Wren's world, accelerated and escalated very quickly. And for those that want to keep trading in the McCole comparison, yeah, sure, there's not a lot of film of Corey Wren yet because he runs a high school veer offense. Not a lot of film of him yet catching a lot of those precise route tree layouts on his film, but he's running between the tackles. And let's all remember, Mecole Hardman was a wing T quarterback in high school who didn't even play in his first year on campus at Georgia at the receiver spot. So I think the development scale there with Corey Wren and Mecole Hardman will eventually look very favorable for that young man's career.
There are a couple follow-ups, too, that I think are important to bring up. First of all, the Hardman comparison works to the positive, just given the speed that Hardman showed in Georgia uniform. But there's also a counterbalance to that, that because Hardman didn't play receiver in high school and spent his first year on campus in 2016 apprenticing a defensive back, you can make a case that Georgia fans never saw the best of Hardman as a wide receiver because he didn't start trying to play that position until 2017, and he was gone after the 2018 season. That's just kind of a fair addendum to that discussion. And one of the reasons why I think Wren's desire to be coached up by Hankton matters is when you are smaller than the typical SEC receiver, I think technique's even more important then. I think precision in your route running is even more important. The ability to, you know, catch 1,000 balls after practice or whatever it takes to have, you know, sure hands and consistently haul those things in during the game. Every single one of those fundamental things is infinitely more important when from a just a regular size standpoint, you're less big than your typical counterpart. All those fundamental things matter more. So his desire to be coached up by Hankton, I think, will serve him well because that's going to be a prerequisite for him to succeed at the college level.
Yeah, and those are all good takes, Brandon, but let's be fair to the discussion here. I think Wren is even a step faster than Nicole Hardman. Some of our resident physical science and training and kinesiology experts on the Dog Nation Forum broke down about 4.31 speed versus 4.4 speed or 10.41 versus a 10.67, which is, you know, Nicole was probably around 10.7, 10.6 a lot in high school. And Corey Wren is a faster gentleman than Nicole timed in high school. And the other thing to think about there is, you know, the game is adapting, Brandon, especially for like matchups. And we all saw how fast Jalen Waddle looked like last year for Alabama in the SEC championship game. When you think of a guy like Tyreek Hill, when you think of a guy like Brandon Cooks, there are lots of examples popping up all around college and pro football where these offenses want that fast, you know, hummingbird on Red Bull type runner that will get around the corner and will run jet sweeps and will really confound a defense. And Corey Wren fits a specific set of skills. If this was a Taken sequel with Liam Neeson, Corey Wren brings a specific set of skills to the Georgia offense. And there's only like three or four guys in the country. Maybe one of those guys is Matthew Bowling that can run like he can.
Doing a lot of fun recruiting talk with Jeff Sintel here as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. I'm going to warn you, Jeff, I got a lot to ask you about. We just did 7 minutes on Corey Wren. We're not exactly setting the blazing pace right now, but I do want to talk to you about a lot of things. And I guess the next name I want to discuss is the decommitment that Georgia also dealt with. It's Akil Agunbi, the four-star offensive lineman, who is instead going to go to Texas A&M now. And we kind of know the backstory here. We know that Agunbi at one point in time been an Aggies commit. We know as of late he had been very vocal after committing to UGA about trying to get other players to join him in Georgia. So my question is, if we want to back the timeline up by even just as recently as a few days, what changed here with, as your reporting indicated at DogNation.com, Agunbi's concern about his mom's health, or really anything else that you can tell us about? Because, I mean, it was not that long ago that Agunbi was like pushing anybody he could to join him at Georgia, and then in just a blink of an eye, he's on Twitter saying, I'm recruitment over, I'm going to Texas A&M, telling you at DogNation.com. It's in reference to the health of his mother. How did all of this change so quickly?
Well, if you look, you know, some folks out there have pointed out when they looked at Akiola's flip tweet or whatever, he never announced that he is flipping or decommitted from Georgia. He basically says, I'll be attending Texas A&M. And let's just simplify this, Brandon. For a lot of people, Georgia football is a, you know, devoted, worthwhile, heartfelt, diehard distraction from some of the walks of real life. But for these young men, it is their real life. This is their life. And simply here, Akiola had seen things in his life with his mother over the last couple of weeks, two or three weeks, that led him to believe that she wasn't making the gains he wanted to after she suffered a stroke earlier this year. And he just felt about being away from her was no longer something he could risk. You know, like I think of situations like transfer portals come up with a family member close to home, but even when he was leaning towards Georgia, He used to tell me, he said, yes, my mother's recovering from a stroke, but the best thing I can do for my family is to take care of the next 3 years of my life and not and set everyone else up in my family for the rest of our lives. So he had a focus on that. But I think there were things going on there which gave him pause, which made him think, maybe this is not the best thing to do. And everybody loves red and black. I know everybody that follows this program loves red and black. But simply put, if a young man starts putting football over serious family needs, then I think those priorities are out of whack. And hopefully everybody can look at this as saying, this is a young man who would have been great at Georgia, who was great for Georgia, but simply has to go another way with his college decision.
And now Georgia, I guess, get a little bit more clarity about what was already going to be a log jam of offensive linemen. It's trying to fit into its 2020 class. One of those guys is Cedric Von Prano, who it hopes to get, the center out of New Orleans. You had a kind of an interesting nugget that you dropped into the forum at forum.dognation.com, and my encouragement to everyone is to make sure they're looking for that free kind of mini burst of Centel Intel there at the forum at forum.dognation.com. As I said before, it's a completely free message board to join and participate in. It is a ton of fun and a lot of stuff in there from Jeff Centel. One of the things that you mentioned was the fact that the four-star center from New Orleans, Cedric Von Prano, was thought to be on campus this weekend and yet ended up not making that visit. We got a dead period here now, which I guess means that schools just can't initiate contact with the recruits themselves. So Von Prano not making it in on a visit before the gun of a dead period. What does that mean for Georgia, if anything, Jeff?
Well, I think the dead period, let's properly define it. Since stuff can keep going on with contact and, messages and text messages and stuff like that. But you just can't host a recruit on campus. You can't entertain recruits on campus. You can't have face-to-face contact with recruits during this dead period. And this dead period is going to last for about another 3.5-4 weeks. Von Prano is a guy, you've seen some of his comments lately, and he's at the five-star challenge this week in Atlanta. He is not at the opening this weekend in Texas. And the five-star challenge is an event that's basically exclusive to Rivals.com Media. One of the things that he has said, that he has maintained, is he still wants to make his decision as of now at an All-American game. Von Prano has told me in the past, though, he would not be against making a silent commitment in order to maintain his spot in the class he wants to get to. You got to remember with Von Prano, didn't make the trip right before the dead period, but he told me that he will very possibly make a trip to Georgia for that late July kind of reveal-ish one last surge for the 2020 class before everybody starts worrying about their high school football focus and their college football seasons and that Vanderbilt game for Georgia. Von Prano, nation's number 3 center, big guy, has explosive upper body power in his blocks. If everybody can see that on his film. And with Akiola's decision, Mr. Von Prano and Mr. Andrew Rame are front and center as the big remaining pieces for Georgia in the Great Wall of Georgia for Sam Pittman.
So let me follow up on Von Prano with one thing. I have noticed what seems to be a lot of potential Georgia targets, many of them accelerating the recruiting process. And my assumption's been, because Georgia's kind of the common denominator in each one of those situations, that Georgia's trying to put the pedal to the metal with the recruits that it's pushing for, and they are responding in kind to say, okay, I made make my decision much, much sooner than I initially thought that I would. Do you think that, and you mentioned that Von Prano may make the silent commitment but not announce to an All-Star game, do you think that Von Prano likely also feels the same sense of, hey, we got to move kind of fast here because that's what Georgia wants to do one way or another? Do you get the sense that Von Prano kind of feels the same way that some of these other recruits seemingly do on that subject?
I think the feeling is simple here, Brandon, with all this. If you don't know where you want to go, then you go through these burdens of talking to coaches and making all these trips. If you do know where you want to go, then it's becoming the norm that it makes more sense to just let the world know, just to get your recruiting over. Von Prano is a young man that, listen, folks, I don't care where he's at with silent commitments or commitments. When it's time for him to be a Warren Easton High School road grader in New Orleans, Louisiana, that's what he's going to do. He's going to dedicate his entire bulk of his first semester of his senior year to that. He's not going to take official visits on weekends. He's not going to make a bunch of trips. He is going to be about chasing a championship once that football season gets well underway. The weekends are for him to have recovery, to look at film, to have meetings for the next opponent. There won't be a lot of recruiting with Cedric Von Prawn in the months of August the 1st to December the 1st. So if he feels a certain type of way, wants to lock it down and wants to make it silent, these are things that not only just getting the burden off of him, but he has a true focus towards winning a state championship for his high school team. And those are the things where I think Mr. Von Prawn, if he feels that certain type of way, would just want to move things off his radar and get this over with.
I think it's safe to say that two weekends ago, another offensive lineman that you mentioned a moment ago, the four-star Andrew Rame out of Oklahoma, I think it's probably fair to describe him having a visit high coming off his time there at UGA. Well, some time has passed since then. He was at Michigan this past weekend. There is no doubt he's getting a strong pull from his in-state program there, the Sooners, just given the success they had with the offensive line a year ago. How much have things maybe kind of worn down maybe the wrong word, settled down maybe, I guess, after Rame was at Georgia? He seemed to love that and told you as much in his piece there at your piece at DogNation.com. How have things changed since then after he was at Ann Arbor?
Well, Brandon, the thing that comes to my mind here is just maybe a card shark metaphor or a gambling metaphor. Because you mentioned visit high, but really it was a visit double down for Andrew Rame. He took an unofficial visit to Georgia in early June. That thing went well, and then he felt the need to come back a couple weeks later on his official visit. Then he decided to accelerate the timeline, as we spoke about. Took the official visit to Michigan, and he said likely that was going to be it. The online chatter, this is the phrase I do that gets Brandon drooling like one of Pavlov's dogs. The online chatter here is that it wasn't an extended family official visit for Andrew Rame over the weekend to Michigan. I don't think the entire extended family, mom and dad, went with him on that Michigan official visit. And I don't think he's going to make any other official visits either. So there's no return back to Oklahoma here for Andrew Rame. And I think I'm probably my best indication of the situation is grounded in what he told me a couple weeks ago. He said his decision could come in about a week to 2 weeks, 7 to 14 days, and that would put his timeline right at the end of the month.
It's Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And Jeff, in the time we have remaining, I want to talk about some running backs. Kendall Milton was at Alabama last week, and first of all, let me give you my sense of this, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree. It seems like of the four visits Milton took, two of those relatively noisy and two of those relatively quiet. I would say his visit to Georgia certainly had some noise and some reverberations, and not just because we're close to that here in the state of Georgia. I would say the Ohio State visit also had some noise and some talk coming out of it. For my money, the best I can tell, the LSU visit, the Alabama visit, both ended relatively quietly. Would you say that description of Milton's four visits is accurate?
Well, it's basically the timeline of his entire recruitment. Most in the industry thought it was really going to be Ohio State and Georgia as kind of the contenders, the main contenders in this decision. And then you see, you know, there is a little bit of juice with LSU with Elias Ricks. That's his guy. That they talked about playing for forever. That's the five-star corner out of California who's been committed to LSU for quite some time. If you look at that backfield, remember, one of the indicators we've been told about Kendall Milton's recruitment is he is coming in to be a number one or a number two, and I don't think that can be easily translated at LSU given the fact that John Emery Jr. is there, Ty Davis is there, they have other backs in the program there as well. The path to being a clear number one or number two is not so evident there at LSU. Well, with Ohio State, they've got two backs that they've had on their radar for the longest time. It seems like some of the online chatter there for Brandon shows that Ohio State is starting to position themselves to maybe get in a position of strength with the other running back in the 2020 class they like a whole lot. He's another top five, top six running back as well. Alabama was a visit where they still got guys like Najee Harris there. They just got Trey Sanders there. There was some, you know, everybody saw Kendall Milton bowling with Trey Sanders and everybody else on social media. There was an interesting report, and I'll cite 24/7 Sports on this one, coming out of the Alabama visit, where his father stated, not naming names in this game here, but he felt to me that there was a two-way tie for the best fit or the best official visits out of these four. And again, that conjecture kind of extrapolates even further that there's probably an Ohio State pull here, and then there's a Georgia pull here. And did Alabama do enough? And where did LSU get into this thing?
Yeah, it should be fascinating to see with Kendall Milton here in the days to come. And I think, as I've said over and over again, if you're a Georgia fan, the only thing you can say is Georgia shot its best shot with Milton. Every indication I got was it was a very successful official visit. And I know you've had a chance to speak to both Chris and Kendall on this topic, and they had nothing but glowing things to say. This one's kind of out of their hands now to a certain extent. They have put forth their best pitch for the program, and it'll either be received or it won't be. But I don't think you can say that Georgia could have recruited Kendall Milton up to this point any differently than it has. Which brings me, Jeff, to another running back, and that's five-star Zachary Evans out of Houston, Texas. And we talked about Evans on Friday because there had been like an Austin American Statesman report and some things like that about Evans taking an unofficial visit to Texas. Then lo and behold, over the weekend, a photo shows up of him taking an unofficial visit to Texas A&M there as well. So what was a top five for Evans seemingly almost certainly has been expanded now. If you're watching on video, you see Evans there leaving Houston to go to a College Station to enjoy that visit there for a little bit. So at this point in time, it seems like this recruitment's expanded. The prediction I think most of us made, which were the Texas schools would get back involved, they pretty clearly are now. I sort of know less about this than I ever have before. I really don't even know what to say about this other than the fact that this one's getting more complicated the deeper we get into the summer as opposed to less. Any kind of comment or opinion you want to share on what looks to be a top five growing to a top seven? And I would say that the two Texas schools probably displace at least two of the schools in Milton. I'm sorry, in Evans' stated top five.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way to look at this, Brandon. Here's the template I'm going by for this one right here. I expect this to be a very contested recruitment. I expect it to look a lot like Trey Sanders did a year ago. And remember Trey Sanders, you had everything from brother at Florida, you had the dogs in it, is Alabama in it, who else is getting in there with the nation's number one running back? I think with Zachary Evans, this is going to be a situation where I don't want to use the word anarchy could eventually happen, but listen, things could get really messy with the running back position, especially those guys up at the top with names like Oklahoma, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, LSU. Those schools are all in it for a guy like Zachary Evans and all these other guys, too. Pay quick attention to Jace McClellan, who is currently an Oklahoma commit, who took a recent official, and he's got great film, Brandon. I encourage everybody to check out that name, J-A-S-E, McClellan, M-C-C-L-E-L-L-A-N. The nation's number five back right now, rating ahead of names like Don Chaney Jr. and Marshawn Lloyd and Tank Bigsby. Well, he took an unofficial visit as an Oklahoma commitment to Alabama over the weekend. And that thing, if something happens with Oklahoma and their backs are no longer Jace McClellan, and they're no longer Jace McClellan and Seth McGowan. Let's say McClellan would choose an Alabama or choose some other school. Then that would open up Zachary Evans to even strongly consider a school like Oklahoma again. And I listened to what you were doing there. You were thinking, Oklahoma's full. Ohio State doesn't feel right. Those two schools are coming out. Texas and Texas A&M are coming in. But these dominoes can change a lot. Even with Bijan Robinson, that's the nation's number four back that Ohio State is always centered on Kendall Milton or Bijan Robinson out of Arizona as one of their two backs. And dominoes will start falling for the elite running backs. And outside, Brandon, of the guys that are already committed, like even a guy like, you know, Seth McGowan, Marshawn Lloyd, some of those guys, I would say Kendall Milton's decision is probably the one that's most advanced compared to guys like Zachary Evans and Bijan Robinson, and you know Don Chaney's committed to Miami, Marshawn Lloyd's committed to USC, but you know I think Milton's decision feels more final, or something's coming down the track where there's not going to be a lot of up and down with that decision. That one seems stable once the decision is made, and you know the other guy you got to think about there, and among the nation's top five or six backs, is Clemson's DeMarcus Bowman. I mean, these running back stuff is going to be weird every year, Brandon. Are highly unusual every year, but for the longest time, even with Zachary Evans, I was heard if he ever took a visit to Clemson, he would get an offer. But he wasn't going to take a visit to Clemson unless he got the Clemson offer. And otherwise, you know, Zachary Evans' top seven, that rapidly expanding top seven, would continue to look a lot different. He's the nation's number one back, Brandon. He is so fast. The pro agility drill in him, he's lowered it down to 3.81. I'll get the chance to talk to him at the at the opening finals later this week. We'll get a good read on, or at least hear what Zachary Evans has to think about his decision. But that one right there, Brandon, if you're looking for a guy that's going to have a lot of endurance for the 2020 recruiting cycle, I think Zachary Evans is a name that's going to be on a lot of folks' minds at a lot of schools and a lot of message boards and daily podcasts for quite some time.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. And by the way, as we get ready to say goodbye to you, I know I'm going to be on vacation next week, and so we won't have Dog Nation Daily next week. But as you said, you do have some big stuff coming up. Would you mind just taking like 2 quick seconds and promoting some of what next week's going to look like for you in particular and Dog Nation overall?
Yeah, interesting. So we're going to have a neat story coming up really soon on the site about Carson Beck. Carson Beck's going to be at the Elite 11 in Texas. That will take place right before the opening finals. That's the national showcase for 160 or so of the nation's top players. They'll have combine testing. They'll have offensive linemen, defensive linemen drills and competition, and they'll have a true 7-on-7 tournament as well. Carson Beck's actually in the Elite 11, and the Elite 11 has 13 of the nation's top 25 quarterbacks there. That's where Carson can make a move up. I think they're currently, which to me seems like a grave injustice here, currently 7 quarterbacks in the country rated higher than Carson Beck for 2020. I think that has a lot to do with him not making a lot of the right combines or camps or showcase events this spring. But this will be a chance for Carson Beck to put his stamp on this class and say, I'm one of the best quarterbacks in the 2020 class, period, which I think he will do. And then I think there's only 18 to 19 key names for me to talk to over the weekend in Texas at the headquarters of the Dallas Cowboys over those days. I think January 27th through July the 3rd, there'll be a lot of recruiting national guy content coming up on DogNation.com. And even in that forum intel thread over the next week or so.
Yeah, so just to be clear, Jeff will be at the opening next week in Frisco, Texas, and a lot of really interesting stuff coming out of that. So I won't be here with you, but y'all stay close to Jeff because he's going to have a bunch of stuff coming at Dog Nation on all of that. Jeff, I know I kept you really long today. I really appreciate you spending so much time with us and talking about all this recruiting stuff. I'll see you tomorrow for Before the Hedges, and just really appreciate you being a part of the program.
All right, Brandon. Have yourself a good week, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff with Jeff Sintel. There's a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Really, really fascinating. And I guess let me say one thing really quickly on Zachary Evans. I'm going to speak as a fan for a moment and not as a, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, like analyst or whatever. You know, I've told you before that I thought that it was a possibility that Georgia could get Evans and Milton in the same class. I believe that's a possibility. If any school could pull that off, it would be Georgia because of how Georgia uses its running backs, the recent pipeline of success, Del McGee's recruiting ability. That's not a bridge too far for Georgia. And yet, if you're going to tell me that Evans would potentially have to consider Georgia with Kendall Milton maybe already in the fold or maybe rumored to be in the fold, we'll wait and find out what his ultimate decision is going to be. Georgia may lose that one too. But if we count Milton as a part of the Georgia class for a moment, Evans coming to Georgia with Milton while also getting a really, really strong pull from Texas or Texas A&M, given the fact that he's from Houston, those two things in concert with each other, a part of a tandem at Georgia, saying no to two macro powers in his home state, that becomes pretty difficult. I'm not saying that Georgia can't do it, but just given the way that Evans seemingly has responded as of late to the push from Texas and Texas A&M, I guess that has me softening my stance on him just a little bit, so we shall see where all of that goes. Before we move on to do our SEC through here, I also want to tell you about my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. And listen, I know that divorce kind of thing, when you hear me even say that word, it almost kind of like shakes you out of your funk. Sometimes you may be just half listening to me, but the word divorce gets everybody perked up and everybody listening because it's a scary thing. You don't want it to happen to you, and if you're in the midst of dealing with it, you wish it was happening to somebody else. Let's just be frank and be honest here for a moment. You really need a friend on your side, and that's one of the things I think about when it comes to Meriwether and Tharp. I've hung out with these guys, I've talked to them, And, you know, their desire to help people is the first thing that kind of leaps off the page when you have a conversation with them. Even in a situation like this, they are looking to be an advocate and be on your side. They have free resources in a lot of ways, including a free consultation as well. I mean, my best advice to you, if you find yourself in this situation, go ahead and start the process of making yourself whole again by going to theatlantadivorceteam.com. It's the website, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. And if you're in a tough situation, that is the way out. All right, so let me do some SEC through stuff here. And boy, a lot of old names, a lot of names we've talked about, you know, in the past here on Dog Nation Daily coming up here. I thought it was interesting to see that Hoover High School quarterback Robbie Ashford, who was a partner of George Pickens a year ago for the, is it the Bucks? Is Hoover the Bucks? For the Bucks there in suburban Birmingham. Ashford, who at one point in time was thought to be either Georgia or Auburn, well, he ends up going to Ole Miss. He announced that commitment yesterday. You know, the Rebels, and I have said, by the way, if you're watching a video you see there, and I guess Ashford's also going to play baseball there too. Remember, he is a really good baseball player to the point where that's a consideration in his football recruitment. You see him there in that kind of like sort of trifold three pictures on the side of that screen grab. Two of those were him wearing a baseball uniform, and Ole Miss is kind of an expanding baseball program as of late. The powder blue uniforms they wore during the postseason were, boy, those were something. I really, really like those. That's obviously not the main point of this story, but nonetheless, Ashford's going to go there and play both sports. But it's one of those moments where you got to give a little bit of credit for Ole Miss for actually recruiting the quarterback position pretty well as of late. Matt Corral, getting him from Florida, and at one point in time, some strong Georgia interest. That's a pretty good win for the Rebels. Following that up, the name that everybody knows, and John Rhys Plumlee, one-time UGA commit, who I think would have liked to have been at UGA under different circumstances. He, I guess, is also a baseball guy. And then now Robbie Ashford kind of in the heels on that. So Ole Miss is apparently using that baseball pipeline to be pretty good for football there as well. And this doesn't matter at all, but I guess this helps the baseball program too, right? Because they occupy a full football scholarship and they don't take anything away from, as many of you are aware, the very limited number of baseball scholarships. So if you can make that work, I bet Scott Strickland, the UGA baseball coach, is like, how about we do some of that kind of stuff over here? How about we get some of those baseball players to come over here and play? A few other names to consider here for a moment. Asa Martin, who at one point in time was a four-star running back, committed to Auburn, then transferred from Auburn to Miami, and now reportedly is back in the transfer portal again. And, you know, I hate this for these young men when they can't seemingly find a happy home to play college football. I think you're going to see a lot more of this, though, in the future, the more this sort of expanded transfer portal becomes kind of a thing. There's a Pareto's law in life, the 80-20 principle, pretty much, you know, 20% of the people do 80% of the stuff, typically speaking. I think we may see something similar to that in recruiting in the future, where when it comes to the transfer portal, we may see about like 20% of the players doing about 80% of the transferring when it's all said and done. A couple other things to get to here for a moment, and I'll try to make this kind of quick. A couple names we've also talked about here on Dog Nation Daily before. Sons of famous fathers are in the news. 2021 quarterback out of Texas, Shedeur Sanders, the son of primetime Deion Sanders. He has recently been offered a scholarship by Tennessee, so the 2021 recruiting of quarterbacks starts to heat up. Georgia lost out on Brock Vandegrift this past week, seems to be focused on Caleb Williams right now. Shedeur Sanders gets the Tennessee offer, so it looks like he's kind of in the mix here in the SEC. Emmett Smith's son, EJ Smith, you remember the picture that we talked about a year or so ago of Emmett Smith, his dad, the famous Gator, wearing the Georgia hat during a football game? EJ Smith has come out with his finalist. Georgia is on that group. At this point in time, I don't believe Georgia and Smith have much relationship, but Georgia is a listed finalist along with Florida and a few others, so we'll see where that goes. I wouldn't expect it to be Georgia, but we'll see where Smith does end up choosing. And then two more stories I want to get to here really quickly. I know the other day I kind of said something semi-complimentary of Jimbo Fisher, the Texas A&M coach. Boy, a lot of y'all really did not like that take at all, because a lot of you apparently don't like Jimbo Fisher whatsoever. Well, if you don't like Jimbo Fisher, you will love Matt Hayes' piece at Bleacher Report. Now, Hayes is a guy we had on the show not too long ago, and Hayes did kind of a profile of the situation at Florida State right now. And let me tell you something. In this piece, athletic director, people associated with the program, they essentially trashed Jimbo for how he handled the end of his Florida State tenure. Now, I don't think there's any denying whatsoever that Jimbo had less than a full reserve of energy at the end of that run there. I think if Fisher were to speak on his own behalf, he would question the level of resources provided to the football program there at Florida State. They are not as all in on football, seemingly, these days as you would expect Florida State to be, especially those of us who were children in the 90s who grew up with that being such a big-time program. They're not really that anymore. It's really kind of weird to see. But basically, they blame everything on Fisher for why Florida State's in such a dire situation right now, which seems to me to be a little bit unfair because, you know, they talk about Fisher missing on some quarterback recruits. But to my knowledge, since Fisher's gone, they haven't signed a quarterback, have they? So that seems a little difficult to pin all of that on Jimbo Fisher. But I bring this up simply because, for those of you who don't like Fisher, and a lot of our audience seemingly doesn't, based on one of our conversations from a couple weeks ago, you'll like Matt Hayes' piece at Bleacher Report really kind of going in on Fisher and painting him in kind of an ugly way. And then one more story to get to, and this is not about Georgia. We'll kind of wrap up our SEC through here, but I want to kind of mention this anyway from a Georgia perspective. The Charleston Post and Courier has done some reporting on the PED situation at Clemson, where a couple of their guys, as you know, were suspended in the postseason last year, and you know Clemson's had its ongoing investigation on this. But even in the midst of what you call like a freedom of information request, the you know sunshine laws in most states provide some sort of opportunity for this, Clemson's not going to release the findings on this, saying, "Hey, of all the guys we've ever tested, only three of them, came back with bad tests." But we're still not going to release the information because we're going to be protected by like the laws that protect secrecy for like medical information for players whatsoever. There's some dispute whether or not Clemson really has a leg to stand on that, but that's kind of the case they're arguing right now. However, here is the point I want to make from a Georgia standpoint, and I'll admit this kind of comes sort of strictly from a pro-Georgia point of view. I think a lot of Georgia fans have been kind of wondering for a while, is there a way to negatively recruit against Clemson, just given the success that Clemson has enjoyed in recruiting as of late? Is there a way to go back and kind of get after them? I sort of feel like if you were Kirby Smart in Georgia, you could kind of use this to your advantage because they're going to say, hey, we've tested all these people. Only three of them had bad tests. That just proves we don't have a problem with PEDs. But if you wanted to do like a ultimate kind of spin zone on something like this, couldn't you say, well, maybe that proves also that you weren't quite as fundamentally sound in terms of making sure it was going into the bodies of the players in your program? Couldn't you plant that in the seed of a parent to say, ooh, are you sure you want to go to Clemson? They don't even know what they're feeding their kids over there. They had guys miss the college football playoff because of a PED situation. They say it's not a problem, but do they really know what they're even putting in these guys' bodies? That's probably not a fair assessment of that situation. But in some respects, all is fair when it comes to recruiting. I wonder if somebody will try to use that against Clemson. By the way, speaking of floor, we mentioned off the top of the program, 969 days. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.